There's another band that'll be in our town this weekend. Pure Prairie League, part of that Sound of the 70s concert tomorrow night at the Family Arena out in St. Charles. Welcome back to the show. I am Paul Harris. Thank you very much for listening. You can follow me on Twitter at Paul Harris Show or on my website, harrisonline.com. Max is here with me as well as we delve into the showbiz segment of the show in which we have three movies to review for you. But Max, before we get into those, a week ago today, I did an extended monologue on this show about the Harvey Weinstein story, which had just broken with a story in the New York Times and accusations about actresses and others in the industry who had been sexually harassed or even sexually assaulted, or in the case of Rose McGowan, claims of rape against Harvey Weinstein. And since then, we have found out a lot more with a lot of names that you might know, like Angelina Jolie and Gwyneth Paltrow joining Rose McGowan. And
the story has only gotten larger over the past week.
And worse. Worse, because the details of the sexual assaults have come forward. So I want to talk a little bit about what impact this is going to have going forward, either for women who have been fighting against this sort of thing, not just in the entertainment industry, but in every industry for decades. And also what it might mean a little bit for the future of some of the projects that the Weinstein Company might have going forward. Now, I just saw online that the Weinstein Company has put out a statement, because there have been stories like one from Cynthia Littleton in Variety saying that there's now a bankruptcy reorganization going on because Harvey and Bob Weinstein own 42% of the company, so they're minority owners. So the board had gotten together and said, you know what, we can't go forward without Harvey, and without him, this company is just going to fall apart. A lot of creative talent has been running for the hills. Creditors are getting antsy amid the exploding allegations of sexual harassment and assault against him. And there's also this New York Times report that the board knew of the payouts to women, millions of dollars that
he had
been paid
out to these
women.
Scale as far as how horribly he treated you, how much money you would get paid.
And that's why many of these women didn't come forward and talk about this, because they signed what's called an NDA, a non-disclosure agreement, in which if you ever tell anybody what the deal was and what you got paid off for, you got to pay much more than you were paid in the first place. So the Weinstein Company has issued a statement this afternoon that says, our banks, partners, and shareholders are fully supportive of our company. It is untrue that the company or the board is exploring a sale or a shutdown of the company. We are moving forward as planned with some of our movies, including Polaroid, which is coming out on Thanksgiving weekend, Paddington 2, which is coming out in January. I didn't even know there was a Paddington 1, but apparently it made like $75 million. There's a movie called War with Grandpa, starring Robert De Niro, that's scheduled to come out in February. The Weinstein Company says business is continuing as usual as the company moves ahead. Can that possibly be true?
No, and it reminds me of when the Orion Film Corporation was hemorrhaging money, and they had 14 movies in production, and they had just signed Schwarzenegger to a movie, and Stallone was going to work for them, and it didn't happen because they couldn't pay back their creditors. The Weinstein allegations have just gotten worse over the past week, as you pointed out, and it makes his initial statement all the more horrible and crazy, because at first the reporting was he was sexually harassing people, and he released a statement saying, you know, I'm working with Lisa Bloom and I'm an old dinosaur and I don't know how to treat women. Well, now the LAPD is actively looking into cases, because,
and the NYPD.
Yes, because he is alleged now to have raped women. And it is so unfortunate that the initial reports were like a Mad Men kind of old studio head. Oh, that's just Harvey. No, he assaulted people.
Yes.
And it's
never been right to do the things that he has done.
And so his whole excuse of I'm from a different era. No, it was not right back then either.
That's your rationalization. That's not the way the world should work.
And do I believe that his brother Bob and that the whole board had no idea? Of course not, because they are in the business of making money and protecting that money. If you're paying out millions of dollars to keep women quiet, your board, your brother, they all know about it.
Yep.
Of course they're going to have to, in the short term, change the name of the company. But I think that this board will be dissolved. I wouldn't be surprised if these movies end up being distributed by another film corporation, because they will come knocking. United Artists will come knocking. That's Tom Cruise's label. They will try to take some of these projects. Lin-Manuel Miranda has already taken his planned Weinstein production of In the Heights away from them because he said he couldn't work for them anymore.
Showtime has announced this afternoon that they are not going to approve an Oliver Stone drama that the Weinstein Company was going to produce about Guantanamo Bay.
So, how
and by the way, Oliver Stone put his foot in his mouth earlier this week, or maybe it was just yesterday,
yes,
saying, you don't have to understand how hard this is for Harvey. No, it's not hard for Harvey. It was hard for the women who were assaulted, raped, or harassed.
Yeah. And so I think them saying we're going to keep going like nothing's happening. No. It's not Chicken Little. The sky really is falling. This
yes.
company is over. I'm also kind of disturbed by the amount of comments I've seen on what we call film Twitter, which is a bunch of film critics on Twitter talking back and forth in their big echo chamber about, yeah, but he helped shepherd some great movies to the big screen. How about all of the careers he destroyed
yes.
when women wouldn't sleep with him? And you always think, well, what happened to Mira Sorvino, or what happened to Gretchen Mol? Well, it's because he would call other studios and say, don't hire this person.
Correct.
And so you don't look at the great movies that got on the screen. Think about the lives that he destroyed, not just by assaulting women, but by ruining careers.
Yes, that's a very important point. And the other thing that has to be said is he says he's going off to get rehab for sex addiction. Here's a quote from sex therapist David Lee. Sex addiction is a moralistic pseudoscience that is used to excuse the selfish behaviors of those who hold sexual privilege in order to protect them from the consequences of their choices. This is not a guy who was horny all the time and was having consensual sex with lots and lots of women.
It's not even a guy who cheated on his wife all the time with willing women. That didn't happen.
Right. This is a guy who was physically abusing, attacking, and destroying the lives of these women who were less powerful than he was. He was a rich, powerful guy. This is not any different from the Roger Ailes story, the Bill O'Reilly story, even the Donald Trump story to a certain extent. And don't email me your political theories on this. I don't want to hear them. I'm just using him as yet another example of men of that same generation who got powerful, who got money, who then decided, I'm going to use this to get women to do what I want, even if it means showing up naked in my hotel room and insisting they massage me or watch me take a shower.
Now, you asked at the beginning of the segment, do I think this will have real change happen in Hollywood?
Yes.
I have to look at one of the biggest film moguls right now is Kathleen Kennedy. She was put in charge of Lucasfilm by George Lucas. She has a lot of say-so over the whole Star Wars enterprise with Disney. Whatever she says goes. And I think that's where you're going to see the change, is quite simply by putting women in power. It's not by having just another guy get to tell women what to do all the time. I doubt you're going to hear the same kind of stories about Kathleen Kennedy
yes.
in the next 30 years.
I agree. Incidentally, Amazon is in the process of trying to buy out Weinstein's stake in two of its high-profile dramas, one from Matt Weiner, the guy who did this Mad Men, and one from David O. Russell, a series that he wanted to have on Amazon Prime. Will this affect the Oscar chances of movies that are coming out this fall? There's one from the Weinstein Company that I'm looking forward to seeing. It's called The Current War. It's about Thomas Edison and Nikola Tesla and George Westinghouse, which stars Benedict Cumberbatch and Michael Shannon, both of whom the early buzz says these guys are going to be Oscar nominees. But will people in the Academy say, no, absolutely not. Nothing that Weinstein had his fingers in. And by the way, let's hope that's all he had it in. The only body parts involved here. Nothing that he had his fingers in can get an Academy Award this year.
I could still see this year a great performance, maybe, some behind the scenes category like costume, score. But as far as best picture, where their firm would win it because producers win, there's
yeah.
no way. There is no way that is dead in the water this year.
In fact, the Film Academy, the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences,
Expungem, yeah.
and the Producers Guild, both meeting in the next 48 hours yeah. to talk about throwing him out completely.
Which they should.
I agree.
I'm thinking there's a good possibility that he will go to jail for a very long time.
Well, I would hope that they can prosecute, because too often, and here's what he counted on when he was doing all this, He was counting on it being he said, she said. Who would believe her? She's nothing. I'm Harvey Weinstein. Well, now that there are a lot of hers, just like with Bill Cosby, sorry, the weight of public opinion is definitely not on his side. And one last aspect of this I want to talk about. Two, actually. Roy Price, who's the head of Amazon Studios, he's been put on leave of absence after an actress said that he did similar things to her. Wow. But the last thing I wanted to mention here is that last weekend, Saturday Night Live did not do anything about this story. And they got a lot of criticism, and Lorne Michaels said something stupid. He said, well, you know, maybe this is just too much of a New York story, thinking that we here in St. Louis and elsewhere in the country didn't know about it and talked about it. No, that's incorrect. I granted a lot of time on this show to discussing this story, and I think a lot of people across the country have heard about it and know about it.
Yep.
But I think the reason SNL didn't do it is, frankly, there's no way to make this funny. There's no comedy angle that you can work on. There were also criticism leveled at Jimmy Kimmel and some of the other late-night people for not talking about it on a Friday night. Most of them don't do a live show on Fridays. They tape it on Thursday, so they couldn't have. And they, you know, how come he didn't get around to talking about it until Monday?
Right.
And even when he did, he only had maybe one line about it. Because there's no comedy here. There's only tragedy. What are you going to do? Make fun of the women? No, you can't do that. You're going to make fun of him? No, you should absolutely talk about what a disgusting pig this guy has been. But I don't know that you can make it funny.
You know, I would think that Kimmel or Colbert could do something akin to what you did last week, which is a monologue about it. Maybe they know some of the same people. They can say this is horrific. But especially SNL, not that they don't have their flashes with being serious, but I don't see how you could tackle this on SNL.
No, neither do I. We got to take a break. Then we'll come back and we'll get to the three movies that are opening this week. One is the story of a Supreme Court justice who's a legend in the legal community. One is a movie starring both Jackie Chan and Pierce Brosnan, and another one is a horror movie that's come out purposely on Friday the 13th. That's today. Back in a moment on the Big 550 KTRS. Atlanta Rhythm Section, another band coming to our town this weekend. I am Paul Harris. This is the Big 550 KTRS. Max and I are talking showbiz. And I have one last thing before we get to the movie reviews, because two people emailed this to me. Last hour, I talked to Alan Sepinwall, a TV critic, about his Breaking Bad book.
Yes.
And they both sent me this story from Albuquerque that the people who own the house that was the setting for where Walter and Skyler White lived are now building a 6-foot wrought iron fence around the property because they are sick and tired of people coming there and stealing rocks from the landscaping as souvenirs or throwing pizzas on the roof, as Walter White did. Yes. In one classic scene.
I love that.
Imagine you're not living in TV land. You're an actual person with a house, and you go outside, and there are three pizzas on the roof of your garage.
You know, if somebody wants to throw a pizza on my house, I'm okay with that.
No, you're not. Not after the 50th or 60th.
Right.
You got to go up there and get it down.
All the birds start flying over.
A woman says, all day, nonstop, there are people up and down this road. They park in front of our driveway. They block us in. We put up cameras. We put up signs. We put up cones, and now we're putting up a fence to keep these people away. All right, let's get to the movies for this week. Three of them, including one called Marshall, which I will start with since I went to the screening of this the other night. This stars Chadwick Boseman. And when it comes to playing real people on the big screen, Chadwick Boseman is now 3 for 3.
He's the guy.
He captured the stoic nature of Jackie Robinson in the movie 42. He unleashed the funk power of James Brown in the movie Get On Up. And now he portrays Thurgood Marshall, a towering figure in American legal history, in the movie Marshall. Now, unlike in the James Brown movie, Marshall does not try to tell the full story of this civil rights lawyer who became America's first black Supreme Court justice. And it also doesn't focus on the big cases that he argued before the Supreme Court, like in the 1954 Brown versus Board of Education story, a case from Topeka, Kansas, where a lot of schools in America got desegregated because of the Supreme Court ruling in that case and because of his arguments. Instead, the movie Marshall focuses on one case from early in his career in 1941, when he was essentially the only litigating attorney at the NAACP. which sent him to Bridgeport, Connecticut, to defend a black man who was charged with the rape and attempted murder of a wealthy white woman. And because Marshall had not been admitted to the bar in Connecticut, he enlisted the help of a local attorney named Sam Friedman, who didn't practice criminal law, but agreed to make the introduction of Marshall to the court. And that's usually a standard thing. Somebody from another state comes in to try a case. A local attorney introduces them to the court. The judge says, okay, you're allowed to do this for this one case. They bang the gavel and so on. But this judge, who's played by James Cromwell, insisted that he remain quiet in the courtroom while Friedman, who's played by Josh Gad, was forced to act as a criminal defense lawyer, which he'd never done. Meanwhile, Thurgood Marshall had to figure out a way to make the case as a silent partner. Well, partner isn't the right word, because it was clear that he was the lead lawyer. He had a lot more experience. He had all the legal savvy. Friedman, by the way, was rightly wary of the publicity that this case would bring, because even though this was Connecticut, not the Deep South, but the Northeast, there were still enough racists and anti-Semites around to make trouble for both of them. So in that way, and in other ways, Marshall has echoes of the classic story by Harper Lee, To Kill a Mockingbird, which, of course, had Gregory Peck in the lead in the movie. Both of them have a white woman, black man sexual assault charge. Both of them don't shy away from the racial hatred just outside the courthouse doors while the drama plays out inside. The director of this is a veteran director and producer named Reginald Hudlin. He gets some very good chemistry out of Bozeman and Gad as the unlikely legal team. Gad manages to sublimate his silliness as Friedman.
He's not just Olaf the Snowman?
No, he's very good. He is a comic relief in a couple of scenes, but he's also very good in the scenes that have to do with the life and death of the guy who's charged here, who's played by Sterling K. Brown, who's from St. Louis, who got a lot of notice for playing Christopher Darden in the ESPN documentary about O.J. Simpson.
And he's on This Is Us.
That's right. He plays Joseph Spell, the chauffeur and butler, who is charged with the horrible crimes here. And Kate Hudson does some of her best work in years as the woman who accuses him of this crime. The movie, however, belongs to Chadwick Boseman. He imbues Marshall with cockiness and fearlessness and intelligence, creating a strong portrait of a man who spent his life fighting for the underdog. My only small complaint about it is that the script takes time away from the legal proceedings to show us some of Marshall's personal life, which does nothing to further the story.
Sure.
Does not need to be in there. Still, I liked Marshall. I liked it enough to give it an 8 out of 10.
Very nice.
Yeah.
Chadwick is just fantastic. He's going to be portraying Marvel Comics' first black superhero called the Black Panther.
Oh.
And that's going to come out in February of next year. So another icon for him. As far as the geek world goes, that's a really big part. So
yeah.
He should be great in that.
All right. Second movie for this week is one that you saw, which is called Happy Death Day. And they released it on purpose on Friday the 13th.
That's right. It's Friday the 13th. And I think this one could come out number one at the box office this weekend, Paul, because the only huge movie of the past couple of months has been Stephen King's It. And even now, it's in the top three, and I think people want to see scary things. It's Friday the 13th. Also, this one is only rated PG-13, which means the teenage demographic can all go and scream their hearts out. So I think it's going to do pretty well. Also, it's got a pretty easy plot to sum up. It's a slasher movie version of Groundhog Day. Done. And I'm sure that's how it got pitched. And I think that's how it got greenlit, and that's why we're watching.
That's a good pitch.
It's a great pitch, because everybody instantly knows what to expect. And once the main actress is killed, she gets to relive her day and try to figure out who's trying to kill her. You have an actress who's done some TV work. Her name is Jessica Roth, but this is her first major motion picture, if you don't count her small role in La La Land. That, of course, was the movie that was Best Picture winner for about 5 minutes last year. She was one of Emma Stone's roommates. So
okay.
When they're getting together,
so
and
she's
they go
in
on
that
the
Dance
road.
In the Street
yes.
scene?
Yes, exactly.
Great scene.
It's a great scene. And she's very, very good in this movie. She has to be in almost every single frame. If you remember Groundhog Day with Bill Murray was in every moment because it's about his day restarting. So she acquits herself really well here. She kind of reminded me of a Blake Lively type, and I could see her having that kind of a career as she moves forward. But this movie was written by a comic book writer named Scott Lobdell. He wrote the X-Men back in the 90s for a lot of years. And I was excited when I saw his name there, because he's a clever writer. And sure enough, this is a pretty clever premise. Now, I will say it's PG-13, which means it's not horribly scary. It's also not very bloody either. Most of the kills are implied because you know she has to die, or they all take place off screen. Just like something like A Christmas Carol or Groundhog Day, it's about this character learning to be a slightly better person. She is a college student who is more interested in having fun than doing her studies or being a good person. And when she is murdered, she's in shock about this until she wakes up the next day and goes, wait a minute, I could have been nicer to people. And that's every single scene is her becoming a better person while trying to figure out who her murderer is. Now, I will say the movie was not quite as clever as I had hoped it would be. I had all kinds of theories going through my head that perhaps the killer was also on a time loop and maybe it was warring time loops. I was overselling it because it's just a simple whodunit. And when they do give you the reveal, I don't think it's all that clever. So it doesn't quite reach great heights, but I think for a fun movie that does not take itself seriously, I mean, the title is Happy Death Day. Mm-hmm. They know that's silly. This is not at all trying to be a serious horror film. It's not a spoof. It's not a satire, but it's definitely not a serious horror film.
Is the tongue planted in cheek here?
I think so. I think they know that they are doing a slasher movie, Groundhog Day, and they want the audience to have fun with that. So I did. I had fun with it. I think it's definitely a throwback to the 1980s B-movies like Happy Birthday to Me, or those Silent Night, Deadly Night, those smaller 80s movies that we all watched on Friday night. So I think this will do really well at the box office, and I had fun with it.
It's good to set your expectations to the correct level. Yes. Before you move into a theater.
Absolutely.
Because if you go into this expecting great cinema, well, you were wrong in the first place.
Yeah, it's not going to be something like Scream that kind of redefined horror. It's not going to be something very frightening like The Ring. This is just a good time out.
Okay, what are you giving on a scale of 10?
I'm going to give this one a 7.
Okay.
Yeah.
When we come back, we'll talk about the two other movies that are opening this weekend, including one with Jackie Chan. That's next on the Big 550 KTRS. It's the Big 550 KTRS. I am Paul Harris. Max is here with me, and we're talking about showbiz. We've already reviewed Happy Death Day, which Max gave a 7 out of 10, and Marshall, the Thurgood Marshall story starring Chadwick Boseman, that I gave an 8 out of 10. And now we get to a movie that neither of us are going to be able to review for you because it was not screened for critics. It's called Professor Marston and the Wonder Women.
Right.
When I hear that, I think of Gal Gadot in Wonder Woman, which is probably going to be top 5 box office movie for this year.
Yep.
Is this related to that in any way?
It is. It is about Professor William Martin Molston, who created Wonder Woman, and the wheres and the whys of this pretty fascinating guy who had pretty libertarian views on feminism and on your role in society. And he had an open marriage with his supportive wife, and he had a lover, and both of them were sort of the inspirations for Diana, Princess of Themyscira, otherwise known as Wonder Woman. He also, at a certain point in his life, had a hand in creating the lie detector, which I think is interesting because of her lasso of truth.
Oh.
It was pretty much the comic book version of that. He wanted to talk about some of his ideas and get younger people involved in sort of changing the world. And so he came up with a couple of different superheroes. And his wife told him, you better make this superhero a woman because I see too many guys out there. And that was one of the reasons.
Good for her.
Absolutely.
And good for him for following the advice.
Now, he also, given that he had a strange home life with his wife and his lover, if you will, he also had some other hang-ups and things that he was into, and it sort of manifested itself in the Wonder Woman book as well. For instance, one of her early weaknesses, you know how Superman, he can't get near kryptonite because mm-hmm. he'll get all weak. Well, if you bound Wonder Woman, if you tied her up, she lost all of her powers. So a lot of those early comics had a lot of hintage of or hints of bondage as well, which again makes her a controversial character and makes him a controversial person. This movie it stars Luke Evans, who was in the Hobbit films. He was also a great Gaston in the recent Beauty and the Beast live action version. Mm-hmm. He plays William Martin Molston, and I know Rebecca Hall plays
his wife.
Yeah, yes. And Rebecca Hall is a fantastic actress. This was not screened here in St. Louis for us, and I'm disappointed because it's right in my wheelhouse. I love the character of Wonder Woman. I've always been fascinated by this guy. And
if you go see this movie, you don't expect a superhero movie, however.
This is about this professor and how he used his real life experiences to create an icon that is still around, of course, to this day. So
the cast also includes Connie Britton from Nashville and Friday Night Lights, and Chris Conroy and Oliver Platt, who's just one of those great character actors who every time you see him on screen, oh, yeah, I love this guy.
I hope it's good. Now, I don't know if it's a good film.
Well, the fact that they didn't screen it for us usually doesn't mean good things.
Although I wonder if the title is hurting it, because I know it's Professor Marston and the Wonder Woman, but you're right. People might look at that on a marquee and go, oh, another superhero film. I don't want to see that. And perhaps there was a better title that they could have given this. But I can only imagine with Wonder Woman breaking box office records and doing very well on Blu-ray, that perhaps if people like that character and want to learn a bit more about William Marston, they could rent that movie.
Okay. Professor Marston and the Wonder Woman, it's called. And then the fourth movie opening this weekend, I did go to a screening of. I went to a theater the other night. I actually saw two movies with the same title, The Foreigner. One of them is a Jackie Chan revenge movie, and I haven't seen Jackie Chan in years. I love Jackie Chan action sequences, so I was looking forward to seeing this. And in this, Jackie Chan plays a guy who's out for revenge after some men planted a bomb that killed his innocent teenage daughter while she was shopping for a prom dress. That's one movie called The Foreigner.
Okay.
The other movie called The Foreigner stars Pierce Brosnan as a former IRA member who's now an Irish deputy minister who's trying to unravel a mystery about a group of killers and bombers who call themselves the Authentic IRA. Each of those plots would probably make a pretty good movie on its own. The problem is they are mashed together into one confusing story.
So you're telling me it's not just that Brosnan's the bad guy and Jackie Chan has to go up against him? Because the trailer makes it look like, oh, it's Jackie Chan versus Pierce Brosnan.
I know, and people are going to go seeing
that's what I thought.
Seeing this, thinking it's going to be like an old Jackie Chan movie versus a guy who used to be Bond.
James Bond, yeah.
Yeah. No. The problem is that Jackie Chan is listed first above the title, mostly because that'll help this thing do huge box office in China, where he's still the number one movie star and where a lot of the financing for the movie came from. But unfortunately, it doesn't give Jackie Chan much to do. He has a few exciting action sequences that prove that he can still fight and move at age 63.
Amazing.
But I would bet you that he is now using a double for a lot of these shots rather than doing all his own stunts as he used to.
Take it back.
Now, he may say he's doing those, but there are some of these where it seems pretty obvious to me.
I don't know.
That is not Jackie Chan. if it is, more power to him. And by the way, all the stunts that he did in all of his other movies, particularly there's one, I cannot remember the name of it, but he does some stunts on a train that are as good as anything Buster Keaton ever did, times 10.
Yeah, no, he's incredible.
Aside from those few scenes in The Foreigner, Chan doesn't have a lot to do.
But we should say this is not action comedy. Jackie Chan, obviously, this is a dramatic.
If you go expecting to see Rush Hour
or Shanghai Noon or something,
not going to be that. Yeah. In a lot of the scenes in this movie, he sits there and looks morose, the way a lot of fathers would after losing their young daughter. In other scenes, he's using Rambo-like skills to track down his prey in the woods. I'm not kidding about that. There's one thing that happens in this where you go, what is this, Stallone?
How did he know how to do that?
It's directly ripped off from Rambo 2. And I'm not spoiling anything for you here, but I am telling you, if you expect lots of action and amazing stunts with Jackie Chan taking on Pierce Brosnan, you're going to walk out of this theater underwhelmed. Now, as for Pierce Brosnan, who is second billed in this, he has the power to, without lifting a single fist, command every scene he's in. And he's in way more of the movie than Jackie Chan is. He's got an Irish accent dripping from his lips as he plays this deputy minister as a true politician, a guy who will say whatever it takes to get information and reaction from everybody that he talks to. You're never quite sure in this movie what his motives are. But they're clearly not as innocent as he wants us to believe at the beginning of the movie. And again, I'm not giving anything away here. While Jackie Chan works most of his end of the plot alone, except, of course, in the fight scenes, Pierce Brosnan is constantly surrounded by unfortunately stereotypical characters who are straddling the good guy, bad guy line. And you never know who's doing this and why. And
it seems unnecessarily confusing. You could have just had an evil James Bond going up against Jackie Chan.
You could have. Or you could have made an interesting movie about a guy who's the Irish deputy minister and a guy, bunch of guys who are killers
Mad
and bombers
bomber or something.
Called
yeah.
the Authentic IRA,
right.
and he's got to track them down. That would be another movie, and that would be a good one. But that's not what you get here. The director is Martin Campbell, who's an action movie pro who worked with Pierce Brosnan in 1995 on the Bond movie GoldenEye.
Right.
And worked with Daniel Craig in another Bond movie a decade later called Casino Royale. And the writer of this movie is a guy named David Marconi, who worked on Live Free or Die Hard, but also worked on an underrated Will Smith Gene Hackman movie called Enemy of the State. Did you ever
sure.
see that?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It was almost like a sequel to The Conversation.
Well, yeah, in some ways it was. And it has that great scene where Will Smith asks Gene Hackman, why is this happening to me? And Gene Hackman says, because you made a phone call! It's about the surveillance state. It's very good. If you haven't seen it, put it on your Netflix queue or your Amazon Prime queue and check it out. Enemy of the State. So I wish that they had split The Foreigner into two tales told separately. They could have opened up the Brosnan story in one and let Jackie Chan do more of his thing in the other. The mashup we get instead is okay.
Now, the title here, I understand that you have an international cast, but that title is, obviously it means Jackie Chan.
Yeah.
Okay. Does that come into play at all?
It's a horrible title.
He's an outsider? It is.
It's a horrible title.
It is.
You can't call it Taken 7.
Right.
Like it's from the Liam Neeson things, because right. in this one, Jackie Chan knows his daughter has been killed
right.
at the beginning. So not like Taken like in the Neeson movies.
And you can't call it the real IRA, because nobody over here in the States knows what that means.
And
so.
Then you wouldn't get the Jackie Chan fans.
Right, right.
I don't know what a good title for this would have been. I can tell you that they couldn't use the same title as the book, because it was The Chinaman.
So maybe The Foreigner's okay.
It's better. It's better. Can you imagine opening a movie with that title in China?
No. No, I cannot.
Even here in the United States, you're not going to get away with marketing that movie with that title. So why they called it The Foreigner, I don't know. When I first heard about this movie, I remember my wife and I went to see a play 25 mm-hmm. years ago called The Foreigner, which is a comedy. Which is a pretty good play that's never been turned into a movie
I
know of.
Hey, Jackie Chan, Foreigner, this is going to be hilarious.
Well, I thought, how is Jackie Chan going to fit into that story? Which is completely different and is not an action comedy at all. It's just a broad farce, which Jackie Chan would not do well in, and neither would Pierce Brosnan.
Right.
So I didn't know what to expect here. I'm not sure exactly what I can do to tell you more about this movie, but I will tell you, since we rate these on a scale of 10, and it's only really half a good movie, I gotta give it a 5.
I wouldn't have expected Happy Death Day to get a higher rating than The Foreigner, but I think that one at least is straightforward. It knows what it is.
Yes.
And this one should have been a little more straightforward.
You're going to have a lot of bad word of mouth on The Foreigner from the people expecting to see Jackie Chan being Jackie Chan throughout
Bond.
The entire thing.
Yes.
Yes, and versus a former James Bond. I think that's going to, it might do okay. I don't know what it's getting on Rotten Tomatoes. By the way, Marshall. The Marshall movie with Chadwick
yes.
Boseman and Kate Hudson and, mm-hmm. and Josh Gad, 100% yesterday.
Very
I looked
nice.
It up on Rotten Tomatoes.
Wow.
I know you don't like that site,
no,
but
I
don't know what they're going to do. But I think the word of mouth on The Foreigner is going to be a lot of people walking out going, that's not what I wanted. That's not what I expected. It's not horrible. I'm telling you right now, it's not horrible, but it might be a movie that some people are going to discover later on, either on Netflix or on cable, and go,
hey. Just walk in the morning and go, okay, it's fine.
All right, I'll watch it. Fine. So there you go. And that's our showbiz stuff for today here on the Big 550 KTRS.